Good day. I'm Bob Smith, Chief Investment Officer at Sage Advisory, and I am joined today by my colleague, Andy Pareda, Senior Analyst in our ESG research team, and we're here to talk about the concept of net zero. Many of us have heard the term net zero, but how many investors really understand the meaning and goals that define this concept and how they might relate to their investment portfolios today, as well as in the future? Our ESG research team, led by Andy, recently released a very interesting report entitled Net Zero Heroes: Understanding Corporate Challenges, Realities, and Goals. From countries and companies to individuals, tackling climate change is at the top of everyone's agenda. And one way we can help to do this is to reach net zero. So what does it mean to be net zero? We've all heard the term net zero, but what exactly does it mean? Simply put, net zero refers to the balance between the amount of greenhouse gas produced and the amount removed from the atmosphere. We reach net zero when the amount we add is no more than the amount taken away. Why is net zero important? Reaching net zero is important as it's the best way we can tackle climate change by reducing global warming. What we do in the next decade to limit emissions will be critical to the future, which is why every country, sector, industry, and each one of us must work together to find ways to cut the carbon we produce. So let me ask you, Andy, when does the world need to reach net zero and why?
Bob, I think that's a great question. But I think first to kind of talk about why we need to reach net zero, I think the first thing to kind of highlight is that in 2018, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, also known as the IPCC, met and basically showcased a report that if the Earth exceeds basically 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, any excess warming is going to cause, you know, extreme sea level rising, biodiversity challenges that can affect things like our food source, and also possibility of things like extreme drought and other forms of extreme weather happening in other parts of the world. And so I think that's kind of the big thing to note, is that even just a little bit above this 1.5 degrees Celsius will have catastrophic damages. And I think that really raised the alarm. So that is something that really was brought up by this report. Now, the other part of the report was basically, how then do we get society prevent warming in excess of 1.5 degrees Celsius? And so the big thing there is where this concept of net zero came about. And essentially, what the IPCC is proposed is essentially we need to have a reduction glide path of our emissions, both the emissions output and that offsetting of things like, you know, trees and other stuff to basically take carbon out of the air or other greenhouse gases out of the air. Basically, we need to have this reduction glide path and then ultimately get to this idea of net zero to prevent that 1.5 degrees warming from happening. Now, we know that can't happen overnight. It's basically a marathon over how fast we have to do this, but we have to start now. And the IPCC basically set 2050 as this target date where if we can get to net zero carbon neutrality by 2050 as a society following a constant glide path, we will then be able to prevent this 1.5 degree warming from exceeding and trying to keep it below that so that we can continue to, you know, have a, you know, healthy Earth.
Thank you for that, Andy. You know, it sounds to me like it's pretty much a global affair, and it's a question that I would ask is that do all countries need to reach net zero at the same time? And is this a matter of concern to us and an important part of the whole equation of net zero? We know that the major emitters like the United States, Europe, India, China, need to reach net zero in their greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, or it will be hard for the math of this problem to work, regardless of what every other country does on the planet. We know that only about 20 countries have signed on so far to net zero policies that are enshrined in law or in some major policy agreements, and that there are about 120 countries that are committed to doing something on net zero and having targets through their membership in the Climate Ambition Alliance. And that includes pretty much all the least developed countries, but only a handful of the highest emitting countries. So right now, around 10% of the global emissions are covered by some form of an adopted net zero target. according to the World Resources Institute. Andy, does this have to change? And if so, how quickly do you think it's going to change?
Well, Bob, I think you brought up the kind of the big question and difficulty in fighting climate change is if a country like China, who is responsible for a huge portion of the world emissions, does not get to net zero by 2050, that means another country may have to get there sooner and also commit to more carbon offsetting measures to get kind of to net negative, like we're seeing some companies that are actually pledging to do. But I think that's the big difficulty, that for every country that doesn't make it, somebody else is going to have to pull their weight even more so, or we're going to go right past that 1.5 degrees Celsius warming and all this work will be for naught. So I think it is very important. And I think this discussion is something that's going to we're going to see play out when we have these worldwide discussions moving forward, especially later this year when COP26 meets. And I think that'll be one of the discussions is what are if a country isn't going to get to net zero, what are the other more capable countries going to do to enact that offset?
Well, you know, I think it's fair to let everybody know that Bhutan, the Himalayan country, is the first country on our planet to actually be carbon net negative as of last year. They have the first place, pole position, on becoming net zero and have gone the extra mile by being net negative. So hats off to Bhutan, and I hope that many others follow soon after. So now let's talk a little bit about how we can actually achieve net zero. We know that policy, technology, and behavior probably need to shift significantly across the board from where we are today. Energy efficiency and fuel switching measures are critical for industry, transportation, and so forth. Halting deforestation, restoring degraded lands, and you know, are ways that we can have meaningful impact to reduce emissions. But I'd like to have Andy kind of explain in detail kind of the four major categories for how we can evolve and work towards net zero on a more global basis.
Absolutely, Bob. So I think you hit the nail on the head. I do think policy is going to help push what stakeholders are doing to help with climate change in a very meaningful way. We can see that even from, you know, in the United States here, when we have a tax credit on an electric vehicle, that helps make it easier for a consumer to buy an electric vehicle, which ultimately then has, you know, environmental benefits moving forward. And so those types of measures, as well as proposed things like carbon taxes, will be very vital in helping to shape what everybody does moving forward. So I think I like to think of what we can do for fighting climate change from a carbon emissions perspective, kind of into four different levers that stakeholders can utilize. I think the first one that's big for anybody can have a part in doing is reduction measures. That means, you know, if I set my thermostat to 78 instead of 70, I'm able to save a lot of carbon emissions because the source of my air conditioning is from a most likely a percentage of it is a fossil fuel based product. And so that type of reduction is going to be essential to kind of look at for everybody what they can do to reduce their emissions. And I think that now the best one that's really going to be the future and the game changer is going to be the innovation side of things, that technology that Bob spoke to. And that innovation is really going to be can be done a lot of different ways, but it could be an innovation such as creating an advanced algae-based biofuel that can be produced on a large scale. That would have a huge impact on our emissions. Or it could be even something like nuclear fusion being created to help be a power source. And that those types of innovations are going to be the big discussion as to how much money we spend as a society to ultimately get benefits maybe 10 to 20 years from now, because it's not going to happen overnight. But I think that's going to be the key component that if we really want to fight climate change, how much money we spend on innovation is going to be a key discussion. Then there's a couple other ones that are really interesting and proposed as possible game changers as to ways that we can also fight climate change. And this is this idea of carbon capture. I know Elon Musk actually put a tweet out just a few weeks ago about how he was going to give a $100 million reward to the best idea for this carbon capture technology. And I think that's type of, you know, that's another type of innovation because there are ways for us to basically pull carbon out of the air and basically either put it into the ground or use it in some other way. And these types of that technology could be able to help us quickly and at a wide scale take, you know, these emissions and, you know, fight climate change on its own. But the other part that's just kind of been talked about, just in general speaking, which is another, with carbon capture is a type of, is this idea of carbon offsetting. And these are projects that can be used like planting trees, which basically help take carbon out of the air or prevent more carbon from being produced. It could even be in places like Guatemala where there's open, where residents use open fire stoves. You can then help somebody create get rid of that open fire stove. You're actually helping decrease carbon emissions. And so these types of projects have been and will probably also be vital in fighting climate change. So I think of it, those four things together, which is reduction, innovation, carbon capture, and carbon offsetting. And I think those are the ways that we really have to kind of look at what each stakeholder can do.
Yeah, Andy, I think that those four, different categories or methods to kind of achieve net zero are very important. I think it'd be worthwhile just to kind of point out also from the World Resources Institute, they have identified a number of key ways or solutions to reduce greenhouse emissions. And their top five, I thought, were pretty straightforward. And definitely there were some investment implications in there, both in terms of what to avoid and probably what to embrace. But number one on their list was, to phase out coal-fired power plants as one of the leading causes of greenhouse gas emissions. Number two, invest in clean energy and efficiency technology. And of course, we've seen that over the course of the last couple of years here, as some of the best performing companies or organizations that are related to that concept of clean energy and efficiency technology. Three, retrofitting buildings. And I think in that, what we're really talking about is how buildings are powered, how they're run, what the materials are that are being used to repair them and construct them and so forth. Number four on their list was actually to decarbonize things like cement and cement production, steel, obviously, because thermal coal and the carbon emission that comes from the creation of steel as we currently do it, certainly here in the United States and around the world. And then lastly, the production of plastics, which, as we know, is a petrochemical-based substance. And the creation of plastics not only have a harmful effect in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, but clearly in terms of the other damage that is created by single purpose or single use plastics and how they find their ways to our oceans and riverways and waterways. And fifth on their list was, fairly emphatically, was the shift to electric vehicles. And here again, over the course of the last year in particular, we've seen a fairly dynamic shift in the interest of investors to really become more involved with the notion of electrification of vehicles, whether they're autonomous or self-drive. But it's clear that over the course of the next decade, this will be a major contribution to the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. I want to thank you for listening to the first of our two-part series, and I hope that you'll join us for part two of our podcast, where we discuss net zero from a corporate and investment perspective and get into some of the technical issues of this rather complex concept known as net zero. I want to thank you for listening to us today. I hope we've left you with a better understanding of the concept of net zero, because climate change is real. It is here, and I hope that we can all join forces and become net zero heroes together. Thank you.
Sage Advisory Services is a registered investment advisor that provides investment management services for a variety of institutions and high net worth individuals. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended as investment advice or an offer or solicitation with respect to the purchase or sale of any security, strategy, or an investment product. Investors should make their own decisions on investment strategies based on their specific investment objectives and financial circumstances. All investments contain risk and may lose value. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. For additional information on Sage and its investment management services, please view our website at www.sageadvisory.com or refer to our Form ADV, which is available upon request by calling 512-327-5530.